There's room in the front row here, Mr. Shepherd. I think we can accommodate you.
I have the full council with them. I figured when they cleared out, we could. Thank you, Your Honor.
Our next case this morning is State versus Costa.
Good morning, Your Honor. Robert Wayne on behalf of Mr. Costa, who is also present in the court to witness the arguments. I'd like to reserve half my time, 5 minutes, if I may, for rebuttal. May it please the court. This case raises a rather interesting question, which basically is, did the legislature know what it was doing in 2003 when it amended RCW?
Question for you. Assume that you're right on the law. What says that your analysis of the effect of the court's order has to be in the court's order?
The reason why it should be in the court's order.
I want a case or law that says it has to be, not why it should be. Things can be good ideas, but it's not error for judges not to do them.
It's not errors for judges not to do something if they exercise discretion based upon the correct interpretation of the law. But what Judge Rule did in this case was to interpret that order as being what the state called it, a vacation order. If the judge exercised discretion or decision based upon an incorrect understanding of what the nature of that order was, then that is, prima facie, an abuse of discretion.
Is there anything in the order that is an error in terms of its statement of the law?
The actual order that was entered?
Yes.
No, the actual order that was entered was a statement that is partially consistent with the law without giving the benefit.
Except for explaining the consequences, is there any way in which that order is inconsistent with the law?
No.
Okay. Do you have a case that says that any of the collateral consequences of the entry of that order need to be described in it?
Not that say that, Your Honor, but I would like to cite the to the case of State versus Grayson at 154 Washington 2nd, 333, a 2005 decision of the Supreme Court. In that case, the court was determining whether or not there was an abuse of discretion based upon the failure to consider a sentencing alternative. Similarly, where a defendant has requested a sentencing alternative authorized by statute, the categorical refusal to consider the sentence or the refusal to consider it for a class of offenders is effectively a failure to exercise discretion and is subject to reversal. That case is further supported by State versus Garcia Martinez.
So would we satisfy your request by sending this back to the trial judge and saying, you can put this language defendant's counsel's requested in if you want to, but you don't have to?
Yes and no. Yes.
About the no part, because that's the part I'm struggling with.
All right. The no part is this. When you interpret the statute, the whole idea of a deferred sentence in a criminal case, you're telling a defendant that if you comply with the law and do your probation correctly, here's the carrot. We're going to relieve you of disabilities if that happens. And then we issue an order at the end that's couched in legalese. You can withdraw your plea. You can enter a new plea. We dismiss the information. It does everything but tell the public and the people who see that order, other than lawyers and judges, what the effect of that order is. It's like making that carrot into just the grassy part at the top. We take away the meat. We take away the effect.
Is almost every court order like that, that the collateral consequences of the order require some legal knowledge? For example, when I have a judgment entered against you, it's a lien against your real property. It doesn't say anything about that in the judgment.
Oh, that's true. And those who examine it are expert title examiners who issue policies of title insurance and lawyers. So it's not necessarily important there. But those who examine this order are employers and landlords who have to pass on whether this man has been restored.
The decree of dissolution doesn't say you're free to remarry. The people that are concerned about that are ordinary citizens who just exited a marriage.
I believe that that's more common knowledge than a deferred sentence, is, Your Honor.
So is the test how common the knowledge is of the collateral consequences?
I would think it depends a little bit upon whether it is obvious on its face, common knowledge, as you suggest, or something that is a matter of some debate and some understanding.
Do you have any legal authority for that?
Well, again, the State versus Garcia-Martinez case and the State versus Grayson cases I've cited to the court are as close as I can come to that, which really stand for the proposition that when a judge exercises that discretion or decision as to how to shape an order, if the judge doesn't know the legal effect or is under a misapprehension, that that in itself constitutes reversible error.
One could review this judge's decision as, I'm not sure who's right, so I'm going to punt by not putting anything in the order so I won't make a mistake.
And if the judge didn't know who's right, then it's prima facie that the judge didn't understand the law, that the judge was, and says so at page 19 of the report of proceedings, believing that this was, in fact, a vacation order, which it was not.
May it please the court, my name is Stephanie Guthrie for the State of Washington. As the court has noted, it was not an abuse of discretion for the trial court to decline to put the requested language in this order, particularly because the order proposed by the defendant was affirmatively incorrect. It included the statement that he was free to deny having been convicted, which is a consequence that only comes with vacation. This is part of why the court concluded that this order was similar to a vacation order. And I think Judge Leach was absolutely correct when he said the court essentially said, this briefing is not sufficient for me to decide exactly who's right on the substantive issue, so I'm going to decline to include this language. It would be misleading because, as defense counsel has acknowledged in his briefing, it's not literally true to say that the defendant was released from all penalties and disabilities. And so to include that language in this order would be misleading, and the order proposed by the defendant revealed his true intent, which was to say that he can deny being convicted, which is not a consequence of dismissal. And frankly, it's still not clear to me whether counsel has disavowed that position or whether his client is still trying to get that penalties and disabilities language in his order so that he can then take that order in Brazil to a potential employer and say, look, I don't have to disclose this conviction.
Well, even if the judge had granted the relief by inserting that language, the documents are still available, not necessarily to the public, but the Washington State Patrol still maintains those documents, don't they?
Yes.
So he'd have to go another step and get another order to eliminate those documents or to have them removed.
Yes, a background check would still have revealed that he had a dismissed conviction. But what he said in the hearing was that he wanted this so that he could justify checking no when asked if he'd been convicted on a job application. And that might be the difference between not getting an interview or getting in and explaining. And the real question is, did the court abuse its discretion by not entering the incorrect order proposed by the defendant and not sua sponte crafting its own order to include the penalties and disabilities language, but not the incorrect statement about the ability to deny having been convicted? That's essentially what they're asking this court to hold, that this is like a limiting instruction where the court, once an incorrect order is proposed, the court must sua sponte craft a correct order that includes this language. And there is no authority for that proposition. Furthermore, substantively, the cases of Brazil and Carrier indicate that a defendant who receives a dismissal under this statute no longer is released from all penalties and disabilities upon dismissal. And the key question on that substantive issue, which I would urge this court to consider reaching, because I think it would provide valuable guidance for lower courts who are asked to decide whether or not to include this language in future orders.
Well, let me tell you what troubles me about your substantive position. You respond. You're saying that the legislature can amend an existing statute without ever mentioning the statute or referring to it in another statute. Just because the other statute does something, that changes the wording of an existing statute. That's a very troubling concept.
I think I understand that it is troubling, but I think the doctrine of, you know, the plain reading of a statute incorporates other surrounding provisions. And this was a...
We would use that rule to interpret the new statute adopted by the legislature. But we would, to determine what the legislature meant with the other statute, we look at the circumstances that existed and the surrounding facts at the time that statute was adopted. We wouldn't go look 20 years into the future to try and figure out what a legislature 20 years earlier intended.
The problem in this case is that the legislature's understanding, when the legislature enacted the misdemeanor vacation statute, the legislature's understanding of 240, the statute issue here, was one thing. And then shortly later, the Supreme Court told the legislature, no, your previous understanding of 240 was incorrect. And this is what 240 really means. So it was a historical twist in that the court in Brazil did not consider the effect of the new misdemeanor vacation statute because, A, it was passed after oral argument, and, B, Brazil didn't involve a misdemeanor. And yet the legislative history of the misdemeanor vacation statute is very clear that at the time they did not believe that 240 allowed for vacation. They thought at the time there was currently no statute allowing for vacation of misdemeanors, so they were creating a new relief that did not currently exist. The Supreme Court then came in and said, no, Brazil already does provide this relief. But the intent of the legislature that vacation be available only in certain narrow circumstances was made manifest and very clear in the misdemeanor vacation statute. So while this is somewhat of an unusual situation, if you have a statute in 1957 that says, you can have A and B, and then 20 years later the legislature enacts a statute saying, in order to have B, you must do these things. Clearly the intent of the legislature is that in order to get B, you must do that. The later intent should control.
Well, normally if the legislature intends to change what you need to do to get B, it amends the statute that contains B.
Right, and here we have the...
And what you're telling us is, without any reference to that statute, they did something over here 20 years later. That tells us what the legislature intended when it adopted this statute some 20 years earlier.
No, but I think...
But otherwise, you're telling us the legislature can amend statutes and modify them without ever mentioning them. That creates another raft of problems. And, you know, statutes are supposed to have titles that tell people what they do, and then their text is supposed to tell people what... is actually happening, and if they don't make any reference to something else, it's awfully hard for anyone to be charged with notice.
But here, because the legislature was not on notice when they enacted the misdemeanor vacation statute, that 240 already allowed for vacation. There was no decision of
the... So isn't the response when they don't like what the court does, and they do this quite frequently, to amend the statute? I mean, I've authored opinions that have been referenced in legislative history as being the reason they're changing the statute. They didn't like what I decided.
Right. But here, Carrier has already resolved that. The legislature did not need to go back and fix it because Carrier resolved the issue for them. Carrier said that dismissal under 240 is no longer vacation because the legislature enacted a separate path for vacation. And by enacting that separate path for vacation, it meant that dismissal no longer accomplishes vacation. And that would have told the legislature, well, we've already enacted a separate path for misdemeanor vacation, so we don't need to go back and amend it. And so the issue comes down to what was the reasoning underlying Carrier. Under Brazil, we had that dismissal came with release from all penalties and disabilities, which equaled vacation. Carrier then told us, embraced that holding and reaffirmed that holding that dismissal with relief from penalties and all disabilities does equal vacation. But they said that now, because of what the legislature has done to specifically say vacation must go through this path, it meant that dismissal no longer equals vacation. What Carrier did not specifically...
At a practical level, when someone's trying to figure out what does the statute language mean, all penalties and disabilities be released from, what that means, you can think of lots of illustrations where that would ripen into a specific setting, a computation of offender score, some other specific, where the defendant has a chance to stand up and say, wait a minute, that isn't what the statute means. What about approaching an employer in an application form? What venue does the defendant have to raise this argument? Wait a minute, this statute means I don't have to report that.
I don't think I entirely understand your question. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm just asking, if it's not ripe now to decide how far does the language, all release of all penalties and disabilities, what that means, if it's not ripe now, when would it be ripe? In an illustration like the employment.
I think it is right now. I'm not arguing that it's not right now. I'm asking the court, actually, to consider deciding that issue. I think, though, if the court feels that the answer is not sufficiently clear, the court could decide this case on the very narrow grounds that it was not an abuse of discretion to not put that language in the order, particularly given that the proposed order included additional incorrect language. I think...
Sorry. Wasn't sure if you would...
I did.
How often does this issue arise?
I'm told it arises with some frequency.
What are courts doing?
I think courts are doing a variety of things. I'm told that some of them are including the penalties and disabilities language, and that is sometimes resulting in the Washington State Patrol entering it as a vacation order, rejecting it as an attempt to vacate an unvacatable offense, or sometimes correctly entering it as a dismissal and not a vacation. It sounds like courts are doing a variety of things.
I'm going to ask you a question. Does the prosecutor say, okay, go ahead, put this language in, but we also want you to add the following language? This order does not vacate the conviction.
Certainly in this case, if it goes back to the trial court and the trial court indicates it is inclined to put that in, we fully intend to ask that it also specifically state that he cannot deny being convicted and it does not vacate the conviction. But in the past, the state has taken the position that this language should not be in the order because it is misleading and because dismissal no longer carries release from all penalties and disabilities. Thank you.
Judge Breland, I'd like to answer your question a little bit more fully. You asked, what about the situation of an application for employment? What is the circumstance? Because that actually occurred in a case called In re Stroh back in 1987. And Hugh Stroh was an attorney who was disbarred because he solicited perjured testimony. He was later granted relief under 995-240. He then applied for a license with the Department of Licensing, and when he applied for that license, he denied his conviction. And when it came time to seek reinstatement from the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court dealt with that issue in its decision, and that was in 1987 at 108 Washington 2nd, 410. And the court was somewhat troubled by it, but went on to say that indeed Mr. Stroh was fully entitled to do so because the language, it's not because of vacation, but the very language, the express language of 995-240, relief from disabilities, entitles him to do that. And what the
court... Is your client relying on your advice that you are entitled to tell your employer you've never been convicted? I just needed court.
Because she'll report me to the bar and seek malpractice against me. She says that's not a consequence. She says that's not the consequence, and that's why this court needs to clarify it. I not only have confidence, I have insurance. But the problem is that this is a debatable point, and the question is, what was the reason why Mr. Stroh could deny it? Because that became important in the Brazil case.
How would you feel if we issued an opinion that said this language should be there, but an order should also say, to be clear, this is not a vacation of the conviction?
I'd have no problem with that. Absolutely none, because we did not seek vacation. Mr. Costa is ineligible for vacation, not today, not ever, because of the language, unless the legislature amends it. No problem there.
So you don't have any problem with that language in the order, so the state patrol doesn't do something that would result from confusion?
That's correct, Your Honor. And may I also point out that as to the state patrol, the only place where the state patrol is mentioned in the statute is under subsection 2, which is the vacation portion. Under subsection 1, which is what we proceeded under, there is no communication with the state patrol. But if I may just finish the point about Stroh. In the Brazil case, when the court reached the issue as to being able to deny conviction, it said this. This court has interpreted the language common to both statutes, released from all penalties and disabilities, to mean that a person who has been granted dismissal under 95 240, is entitled to assert that he or she has never been convicted. And the citation is to Stroh immediately after that, because Stroh, which said in so many words, the express language of RCW 995-240 entitles Stroh to assert that he's never been convicted. It's the language of the statute. It's not vacation. Vacation is different. Vacation means that there is no criminal history. So if you get in trouble in the future, it can't be brought up. Mr. Costa is never going to be able to be entitled to that kind of a benefit. That's out of the question. The most that he can do is say, I'm a full-fledged citizen. I've been restored to my rights to the extent that they can be restored. But if he's ever prosecuted again for anything, this will be criminal history, and it can be used during the course of the trial. So what we're seeking here is definitely not vacation, and the state is wrong in arguing it.
What you were seeking in the trial court and what you seem to be asking us here, isn't that effectively a declaratory judgment articulating what all the consequences are of this statutory status?
Well, I guess one could say that, but I think what we're really seeking is the plain meaning of what it.
Counsel has suggested that your proposed order was not a correct statement of the law, and that you're really asking the trial court to modify the order to make a correct statement. I don't remember that being addressed in the briefing. Could you respond to that?
Well, I think what counsel is suggesting is that the inclusion of the ability to deny conviction is an incorrect statement of the effect of the relief from disabilities. And as I say, under Stroh and under Brazil citing Stroh, that is a correct statement. My order was correct.
I agree with her contention that your order was an incorrect statement.
Yes, Your Honor, 100%. But even if it had been, even if the court was troubled by it, to the extent that the court would say, I will not enter an order which includes any form of vacation, when in fact we weren't seeking it, shows that the court was here when we were here. We weren't on track. It was a decision made on untenable grounds in this case. We ask that you remand this. Send it back to Judge Rule and tell him you can do it if you want. This is what the statute says. It is not vacation. Make it clear so it doesn't come up time and time again in every misdemeanor deferred sentence. Thank you.
Thank you.